By the time she finally pulls up to the hideaway, her family at home is halfway through dinner, and the parking lot of the fried chicken franchise diagonally across the turnpike is packed with customers. But food is the last thing Sally wants. Her stomach is jumpy, and she's nervous. She's insanely nervous, which is probably why she brushes her hair twice before she gets out of the car and starts for the motel office. Pools of oil shimmer on the asphalt. One lonely crabapple tree, plopped down in the single plot of earth and surrounded by some red geraniums, shudders when the traffic on the turnpike zooms by. Only 4 cars are parked in the lot, and 3 are real bombs. If she were looking for Gary's car, the one farthest from the office would seem the most likely choice. It's a Ford of some sort, and it looks like a rental car. But more than that, it's been left there so neatly and carefully, exactly the way Sally would imagine Gary would park his car. Thinking about him, and his worried look, and those lines on his face, makes Sally even more nervous. Once she's inside the motel office, she rearranges the strap of her purse over her shoulder. She runs her tongue over her lips. She feels like somebody who stepped outside her life into a stretch of woods she didn't even know existed, and she doesn't know the pathways or the trails. The woman behind the desk is on the phone, and it seems she's in the middle of a conversation that could go on for hours.
"Well, if you didn't tell him, how could he know?" she's saying in a disgusted tone of voice.
She reaches for a cigarette and sees Sally.
"I'm looking for Gary Hallett."
Once Sally makes this announcement, she thinks she must really be crazy. Why would she be looking for someone whose presence spells calamity? Why would she drive over here on a night when she's so confused? She can't concentrate at all, that much is obvious. She can't even remember the capital of New York State. She no longer recalls which is more caloric, butter or margarine, or whether or not monarch butterflies hibernate in winter.
"He went out," the woman behind the desk tells Sally. "Once a moron, always a moron," she says into the phone. "Of course you know. I know you know. The real question is, why don't you do something about it?"
She stands, pulling the phone behind her, then lifts a key from the rack on the wall and hands it over.
"Room 16, she tells Sally.
Sally steps back as if burned.
"I'll just wait here."
She takes a seat on the blue plastic couch and reaches for a magazine, but it's Time, and the cover story is Crimes of Passion, which is more than Sally can bear at the moment. She tosses the magazine back on the coffee table. She wishes she had thought to change her clothes and wasn't still wearing this old T-shirt and Kylie's shorts. Not that it matters. Not that anyone cares what she looks like. She gets her brush out of her purse and runs it through her hair one last time. She'll just tell him, and that'll be that. Her sister's an idiot. Is that a federal offense? She was warped by the circumstances of her childhood. Then she went out and screwed things up for herself as an adult to ensure that it would all match. Sally thinks about trying to explain this to Gary Hallett while he's staring at her, and that's when she realizes she's hyperventilating, breathing so quickly that the woman behind the desk is keeping an eye on her in case Sally should pass out and she has to dial 911.